You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Monday, July 28th, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. On today's program, Mark Ames on the Holocaust denial history of Reason magazine. What's behind this libertarian interest in Holocaust revisionism, and how does it connect with the Koch brothers? It's an interesting piece. There's a lot to get to there. Also,
we have some updates for you on stories we've been talking about the past week. We will bring you the latest on what's going on in Gaza. BuzzFeed has... I'll talk about what BuzzFeed has done with their plagiarizing reporter. And we got tons for you.
A Tea Party congressperson confuses...
How could I forget this
Well,
one?
I can't even... I don't even know how to set it up. Oh. Nothing has made me laugh more than a long time.
Here's a fun story, too. Satanists are going to take advantage of the Hobby Lobby ruling. We'll get to what they're going to do. And, Dinesh D'Souza's got a problem with Google. We'll get to all that, plus much, much more. But first
we're going to get to Mark Ames. Sorry we're running a little bit late today, folks. I just want to say here up top, I'm sort of okay right now, but this morning I woke up and I was...
This is more for the better half.
No, this is just needs to be set up top, especially before I do an interview, that I was incredibly sick. So I'm sorry we're a few minutes late. I don't know if there's much more to say about it, but wow. So I'll do my best here. We'll be right back with Mark Ames.
We are back. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks. This is the Majority Report. Joining us now is Mark Ames. He's a senior editor at Pando Daily, and he has a new piece out called As Reason's Editor Defends Its Racist History, Here's a Copy of Its Holocaust Denial Special Issue. Mark, how you doing?
Doing good. How you doing? I hear you're not doing too well.
I am not doing too well, but I am. As I laugh at some of the things you've uncovered here and cringe, I'll be. But the cringing especially will really be happening. But I'll do my best to soldier through this.
All right.
So, let's start with. I mean, you basically uncovered a copy of Reason from the 70s that goes into Holocaust revisionism, Holocaust denialism. But I love the story of how we got here. It started with you looking at Reason's coverage of pro-apartheid coverage, and then you got a response. So explain how we got here.
Yeah, well, I mean, a little bit further back context, I should say, myself and Yash Levine, who's my colleague, longtime colleague, going back to the days of the Exile, the Russian newspaper, you know, we spent those years really battling oligarchs and neoliberals. The Russian government shut us down in late 2008. We came back here, and one of the first stories we stumbled across had to do with the Koch brothers and the Tea Party. And to us, it just looked like a very typical oligarch, you know, AstroTurf thing. And what we wound up realizing, we kind of stepped into a hornet's nest, and that these guys are involved in politics and sort of creating or making the political ideological ecosystem friendly to them. They've been involved in this for decades on a level even Russian oligarchs never have been. So I didn't just take up this story then. This is sort of the latest chapter. And what happened more recently was Rob Unz, that's another whole nother story. He's kind of a Silicon Valley right-wing multimillionaire. He was the editor of the American Conservative. He put up a bunch of archives of Reason and some of the other old libertarian stuff online. And what I found going through some of those archives of Reason was that they had article after article in the 70s and then in the 80s in a sort of different way, defending, promoting, backing white supremacist apartheid rule in South Africa. And so as I dug deeper in, I just couldn't – they actually had a South African columnist, a regular columnist, a foreign correspondent, Mark Swopel, I guess was his name, who constantly said that white rule and libertarian free markets go hand in hand. And if you have majority rule in the hands of the wrong color, as they put it in Reason magazine, then you're going to have collectivists and socialists running the roost. So I wrote about that a couple weeks ago in Pando, just when Reason magazine and Rand Paul and some other bigots were coming into San Francisco to try to sell libertarianism to the techie rank and file.
Right.
And Reason's response was bizarre. I actually have to admit, I really thought, certainly a guy like Matt Welch is the editor-in-chief, I really thought he would just say, yeah, that's disgusting. We're not that anymore. Let's move on.
Right.
And that would have been it. Instead, he attacked me, called me conspiracy theorist, and tried to make the excuse that, yeah, sure, we did have people who wrote a lot of pro-apartheid stuff, but we also had people who were critical of apartheid. And he pointed to an article which painted a Bantustan. I don't know how familiar you are with South Africa, but they had these Bantustans.
Yes.
So Siske, which was just a brutal, it's basically where they herded hundreds of thousands, forcibly removed blacks, and then forcibly packed them in. It's like Gaza Strip sort of stuff, but potentially worse. I mean, the poverty and malnutrition rates there were just through the roof. They, in 1985, Reason, you know, blew Siske. It was like a tourism pamphlet about what a libertarian paradise Siske was. And Matt Welch today said this is proof that Reason was anti-apartheid. And so I just thought, Jesus. So while looking through this, I had also been searching. I also found evidence. I couldn't find the actual issue, but I found evidence from other articles and letters to the editor that they had put out an entire issue of Holocaust revisionism. There were some angry letters to the editor several issues later that were in the archives. I spent a long time hunting for this. I went through microfiche files of public libraries. I've search, and I finally found both the microfiche and then the original issue. It's February 1976 issue of Reason magazine that has actual neo-Nazis in it. A guy named Austin App, who's considered one of the founders of all Holocaust denialism, and he was an actual pro-Nazi. He was in Nazi groups, all sorts of Nazi groups. He was a fairly well-known name in the 70s when Reason decided to publish him. He was known as a Willis Cardo figure, you know. He'd been openly Nazi for decades.
So let's actually, I want you to get into this specific issue and who the people that they chose to publish and host in this issue are. And then I connected to that, and we'll get to this more. I'm glad that you mentioned in the outset that your coverage of the Koch brothers goes back several years, and the origins of this, of your looking at Reason and all of these outlets is goes far beyond uncovering the fact that they were, it's hilarious that Matt Welch, the defense being, no, we definitely published people who said apartheid wasn't so great. You know, I mean, that's like, I mean, yeah. I don't know, whatever the equivalent of damning with faint praise is, as applies.
Insane.
It's just stunning. But I think what's interesting that you also get to in this piece and connected with talking about who some of these people are that Reason published was how this fit in. This isn't, even if they look at it now as this is sort of an embarrassing thing that Ames uncovered and it's from a long time ago and, you know, he's a conspiracy theorist, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure nobody wants, Matt Welch doesn't want this article published. And they would say, you know, that's just an embarrassing tweak in our history. But you really show how the Koch brothers and this project this revisionism issue is essential to the broader project of what the brothers are up to. So those are two parts, obviously. There's a lot to chew on, but maybe start with who are the people in this issue, and then how does this revisionism wasn't just a cork, it fits into a bigger picture that you're uncovering.
Right. Well, I should also just add that this weekend, Reason finally responded to the expose of their Holocaust denier issue, and they essentially denied it, even though we put the entire issue online and it's all around, and, you know, all kinds of people in academia and the media have already said, my God, this is horrifying. Right. They kind of did a non-denial, again, sort of like with the apartheid ones, and basically, yeah, we published some Holocaust deniers, but, you know, we generally don't believe the Holocaust. There were a few Holocaust deniers. What's the big deal? And besides, we're pro-gay marriage and we're pro-pot, so we're cool. You know, it was pretty stunning. They should have just said, we're sorry. You know, this is disgusting. And it wasn't just one issue. I mean, they published several of these guys several times for many years. But they particularly focused on one issue. And you're right, there's a politics to it. It's not just out of the blue, on a whim, some Koch brother or some Reason guy decided, you know what, I'm a bad person and I'm just going to deny the Holocaust. There's a deeper libertarian politics to it. So let me first just name a few of the people that are in the issue. I mean, I ran by both the names of the contributors and the people and the books that were promoted in this issue of Reason, books like The Myth of the 6 Million by David Hogan, and
that sounds
million,
subtle.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. The Myth of the 6 Million Swindle by David by Austin App. There's a guy from the British National Party, which you probably heard of.
Yes.
Richard Harwood, his book. It's another one of these, you know, the 6 Million, this or that and the other. All these people who went on to work in many of them in Willis Cardo's Institute for Historical Review. Willis Cardo's a big neo-Nazi. This is the Institute for Historical Review, is where David Irving, the big Holocaust denier, and David Duke, of course, the KKK guy, where they also palled around. In any event, I ran these names by Deborah Lipstadt. She's from the Holocaust Museum and Emory University, and sort of the expert on the Holocaust and Holocaust deniers, and she wrote back and said, wow, this is a who's who of the early American Holocaust denier movement. I mean, that's it. That's how she described the Reason issue. So you have, besides Austin App, who I just described earlier, the neo-Nazi, you have James J. Martin, who, what's even, you know, more sort of disturbing is that James Martin, he began openly writing Holocaust denial stuff in the mid-late 60s. And in fact, the magazine he worked on, Rampart Journal, is listed in the Holocaust Museum's timeline of denial. It's listed as a libertarian magazine, Rampart Journal. And one of the backers of that, one of the main backer, really, was young Charles Koch. Mm. So this begins in 1966. And there's several Holocaust deniers and several issues denying the Holocaust, saying that the Einsatzgruppen were, you know, I don't know, like administrators and decent people. And, you know, like, it's just really crazy stuff. And that Germans are victims of Jewish Germanophobia and so on and so forth. And so James J. Martin started writing Holocaust denial stuff under Charles Koch's tutelage in the mid-late 60s. Koch kept backing him through various libertarian outfits, the Institute for Humane Studies, the Center for Libertarian Studies, Reason Magazine. He was in several issues of Reason Magazine, and even the Cato Institute published a book with his foreword, a Holocaust denier book, in 1980.
The Cato Institute published a Holocaust denial book in 1980. That's just an important stat right there.
Yeah, it's in there, and I have the link. You can buy it on Amazon. It's by Harry Elmer Barnes. He's adored by neo-Nazis and Holocaust deniers. He's considered sort of the godfather, the link, as Deborah Lipstadt wrote, between sort of respectable academia and gutter anti-Semitism and Holocaust. And Cato in 1980 put out a book, Harry Elmer Barnes, with the foreword by James J. Martin, when James J. Martin was already in this group with David Irving and David Duke.
Right.
And I think in that year when Reagan won, is 1981, and you just see the Kochs drop all of this like a hot potato. They just drop it completely. And they move a lot of their operations into D.C. and just sort of really distance themselves and hope everybody forgets.
They see the opportunity that the margins have moved to the mainstream, but not all of the margins. So they need to drop those margins that are really unacceptable and then ruthlessly exploit the environment that's been opened up for them. That's fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, you have to understand Charles Koch. He's very unusual among oligarchs. He's certainly the most ideologically... I mean, first of all, he and his brother represent the richest brother team on earth, right? They're worth over $100 billion, according to Bloomberg. But they've also been very deeply politically involved for over 50 years, very focused on radical politics in order to change the ecosystem, the ideological and political ecosystem, to their advantage. And it's worked. So they weren't worth $100 billion even 4 or 5 years ago, let alone, you know, 50 years ago. From their viewpoint, it certainly worked. For them, Holocaust denial, well, you see, in the issue of Reason, Holocaust denial is very deeply intertwined with trying to discredit and smear Franklin Roosevelt, World War II, and really the New Deal.
Right.
You have to understand that libertarianism at its core is anti-communist, anti-socialist, anti-collectivist. That's what it is. It's a purified, radical, anti-communist ideology. You know, they're willing to create like a consistent larger ideology where the state should not be telling, or at least the federal government, let's say, should not be telling you whether gays can marry or not and whether you can smoke pot or not, although they do believe the states can oppress you for that, but not the federal government. And so that there's a consistency to their just nonstop attacks on anything that has to do with the state, where the state is involved in helping people or trying to right wrongs in any way. And that's really at the core of what libertarianism is. It's extreme in its anti-unionism, in its anti-welfare state, anti-social democracy, very anti-democracy as well. So, you know, their problem in fighting history is part of the ideological battle. And FDR is really their monster. They're Hitler in the eyes of right-wing plutocratic big business. They're Hitler because he, probably more than any president, radically shifted, you know, some portion of political and economic power and pie from the plutocrat class to, you know, to the working class and to retirees and so on and so forth.
Right.
For them, you know, and through the, by empowering the federal government. And they've been waging that war against FDR since the mid-30s. To them, he is the world's worst tyrant that ever lived. And they realize they can't disabuse people of their fondness for FDR and then his New Deal program if they can't, if so long as World War II, which is his most popular cause of all, is somehow discredited and undermined. And you can't undermine that with the Holocaust, with people believing in the Holocaust. I mean, that wasn't why we went to war, but certainly after the war, it meant that unlike after World War I, when we realized, oh, there were actually a lot of lies about the Germans. After World War II, we realized, well, the Germans are actually much worse in this war than even we knew.
Right.
And so the point is they're trying to undermine the Holocaust, discredit the Holocaust, to discredit the thing that protects FDR from criticism more than anything, which is the just cause in World War II. Then if you can discredit that, then, you know, that's why they go after him in this issue. They make it seem like Pearl Harbor was a conspiracy, that he staged it, or he tricked the Japanese into bombing Pearl Harbor. They're trying to do everything to discredit FDR and World War II together in order then to just peel open the whole, all the New Deal reforms and take it all back.
So this shows up. I mean, this is also Pat Buchanan published a book like this a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, so this just sort of continues and continues. But I think that that's really the essential point, that basically, following your argument, that basically we need to – the ultimate goal is to attack and undermine the New Deal and any type of more accountable democracy or even slight social democracy in America, but everybody loves FDR, and you can't distinguish. You can't say, well, he did fight this important war and, you know, and all of that, but domestically he was this horrible communist. And then it'd be funny because people would say, why? And then you'd have to say, oh, because of all of the programs that have benefited you and allowed you to live a middle-class lifestyle. That's why he's this horrible monster. But you need to go and you need to go and really, you know, because the other kind of amazing things that you pull from some of these guys are, you know, the project to make FDR look like a horrific tyrant runs hand in hand with, you know, Hitler was a humanitarian or a misunderstood humanist. I mean, it really is mind blowing. You know, get into that a little bit, because they're literally trying to set that inversion. Like it's like the Matrix. You took the wrong pill, and FDR was actually this jackbooted thug, and Hitler was a kind of, you know, maybe naive, eccentric kind of German leader doing his best. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It is. Well, but, you know, what they were doing, you know, you got to remember also the context. So this is 1975, 76, when the Koch decided to push Holocaust revisionism through what they were building up as their real mainstream thought leader, you know, magazine, Reason Magazine. They decided 75, 76, so this is the time of, you know, after Watergate, fall of Saigon, the church committee hearings. I mean, the talk at that time, people don't remember this now, was that people were ready to do away with the whole Cold War. They were ready to abolish. I mean, it seemed certainly in 75, 76 that the CIA was going to be abolished. It was almost a for sure thing. That even like marijuana laws against marijuana were going to be abolished. It was a very, very you know, unusual time, which presented an opportunity for people who were very ideologically focused, like the Kochs. And so when you have all of this instability and this complete loss of faith in establishment narratives and establishment institutions, they saw this as an opportunity to actually reach out. So some of these articles reach out in a very explicit way to new left revisionism and say, hey, you know, you guys are you're doing revisionism on, you know, which is right. And you're catching up to us far right revisionists. You're revising the Cold War history, right? Because the libertarians and the new right thought fighting communism abroad was actually just more welfare state stuff. What they wanted to do was fight communism at home nonstop, like McCarthy did.
Right.
So they said, so you're revising the point of the Cold War. You're revising, you know, you're doing revisionism on Vietnam War. You've done it on World War One. Now it's time for you to do it on World War Two with us. And so part of that was, I mean, when you can start. When people lose faith like that, and if you can start to convince them that, you know, white is black is white. Look, the John Birch Society, which Charles and David Koch were members of and their father helped start in the 60s, was constantly putting out propaganda that the civil rights movement was controlled by Moscow, that Martin Luther King was an agent of Moscow and that he was a puppet run by Moscow, that Earl Warren was a puppet of Moscow, that Ike was an actual, you know, knowing, willing, witting agent of Moscow, that he was.
That one was true.
In Moscow. Yeah, exactly. That one, we'll grant you on that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, so, Ike, obviously, he was a pretty, I mean, if you just, some of his stuff on collectivizing the means of production and, use versus exchange value. I just want to be intellectually honest here.
Well, and his head is as shiny as Khrushchev.
Right, exactly.
You know? And that's all you need. And that's in order to put those ideas in. Yeah,
exactly.
So these guys were writing. They did this also in the Rampart Journal when Charles Koch was a funder and a trustee of Rampart College. They were writing this stuff that, the Nazis were misunderstood, that they didn't want war, that, you know, actually in the issue of Reason, Austin App, the neo-Nazi guy, writes in Reason that the Munich Agreement, which gave Nazi Germany, which gave Hitler chunks of Czechoslovakia, he writes in Reason that the Munich Agreement, and it's even a big pull quote, so Reason was clearly proud of this. He writes that it was not appeasement, it was belated justice, is what he called it, and called the Czechs, and he said the Czechs were chauvinists, and Hitler only wanted to avoid war. And was a man of peace, and he was forced into all of these things against his will. And then, of course, that must mean that the Holocaust is a lie, and it's a lie because, as Austin App wrote, they used fabricated corpses to blackmail Germany. And all this stuff is in Reason. It's just crazy, and it's, again, it's crazier still that Nick Gillespie, you know, the Fonzie of libertarianism, I'm sure you've seen him, the leather jacket.
Oh, yeah, he's very cool. Very, very cool.
Very cool. Hey, there's no Holocaust. Hey.
Yeah. Hey. You know, oh. Yeah.
So, like, he wrote over the weekend that what you read is not what you read. I mean, sure, there's some Holocaust denial there, but that doesn't mean there's Holocaust denial there. It's right. The craziest response. I don't get these guys. Like, back off and admit it. And I think, you know, one of the problems is that some of the main people who were in charge of that issue are still in charge of Reason, the Reason Foundation, which publishes Reason. They're still in charge of it today. So Robert Poole, who was the editor-in-chief of Reason in the Holocaust Denial issue. He's still both a board member and an officer in the Reason Foundation. Manny Klausner, who was the co-editor, is still today a board member of Reason. David Koch, Koch for funding it, Koch is still a board member of Reason Foundation. Marty Zupan, who was the books editor, and she's on the masthead, she's today the president of the Institute for Humane Studies, which is their big recruiting outfit, and Charles Koch's, you know, longest outfit. So these people are still around. So I guess they're worried that, you know, if they admit the obvious, then they have to maybe do some accountability for it. But they have these people still in the organization, still running it.
Right. No. I think that's the key. Just the material point of it, right? That these people who were responsible for this in the past could still be implicated. It's not like, well, you know, in the 70s we had a bunch of, you know, that was a crazy time,
yeah,
and all of these people are kind of gone and discredited. I think that's one. That's obviously one big part of it. But the other thing, you know, and as we head towards wrapping this up, I can just think of, and this is taking it, you know, so we'll leave reason and go to the calls that we get on this show. And the joke will be like every time I am Sam when he's taking one of these calls, and I'll say like, all right, it's time to get him to endorse slavery. You know, like how many minutes will it take before, you know, it's like, all right, well, I did call in to say that taking away my light bulbs is destroying my freedom. But if you insist, yes, Alabama should be able to have slavery. I mean, you know, so that there is, I guess, the point is that it seems like even on the basement to calling podcast and YouTube show level, all the way up through, you know, being someone who gets invited on Bill Maher and writes for Reason. And as you say, that the first thing they always will say is, oh, no, come on, guys, we're cool, we're pro-pot, we don't hate gay people. But there is this almost more I'm hesitating to make this because I'm not 100% sure if I would, you know, if I could defend this, but I would say even more so than other areas of the right, not all, there is more comfort with totalitarianism and mass political oppression in libertarianism as any other ideology as exists, is how I will put it. And that it's just kind of stunning that a thing that just continues to sell and sell and sell and shout from the rooftops that its literal and sole purpose of being in politics is freedom constantly finds itself in whether it's, you know, apartheid or Holocaust revisionism or
Pinochet.
Well, yeah, Pinochet is the classic example. Yeah, I mean, that's because literally, I mean, he did hand the policy apparatus to them. What does that just say? I guess, you know, I have a sense, obviously, of what you'll say, but I just kind of want you to go to bat on just how, again, like, what more will it take to just fully really discredit this thing, and how this example, again, of their response to this and the doublespeak and also, I guess, and I do apologize, this is where my sickness is coming through a little bit, but I think it's like that it's not just doublespeak, that the bottom line is that they could write that South Africa was one of the freest places in the world because they're not thinking about Africans and Bantustans. They're thinking about a liberalized exchange rate. They're thinking about less labor laws. And that's always the bottom line.
Yeah, no, I mean, the reason why, you know, there I have also downloaded from Reason, or the Libertarian Review, I guess it was.
Yeah.
I think it was a speech to the Libertarian Party, a convention in 1980 when David Koch was the vice president, where in one section on foreign policy, this guy, you know, said, look, one area where we really need to back off on and need to be conscious of is South African apartheid is way too popular among libertarians, and we need to tone this down. and he said, you know, and the guy even admits, I was caught up in it too. And he said, because of gold and because of, you know, libertarians believe in minority elite property elite. Elite means property elite, right?
Yes.
We've allowed the right to redefine elite as like some hapless academic in their ivory tower or some pundit somewhere. Elite is money and property, you know, and that's what makes this so hard to battle. I mean, if libertarianism didn't have the funding and the backing it had from you know, the world's wealthiest extraction industry people, I would go nowhere. But if you bombard people, the propaganda works. It does work. It works, and it's very hard to disabuse your brain of these things. And I found a lot of resistance, especially going back a few years. I think less so now, but I definitely at first when I was critical of these guys, a lot of resistance on the left to say, you know, oh, they're not, you know, so that is, no, this is actually the radical right wing of neoliberalism. This is the radical right. And its goal is not to fully take power necessarily, but to always push things right and to remake the ecosystem. And let me just add one more thing.
Yeah.
Getting back to your point about why Holocaust revisionism, there's another point that I may write about this. that we might forget today, because neocons have, I think, probably changed some of the image of the public of Jewish intellectuals, let's say, because so many neocons were Jewish or are Jewish. In the 70s, Jew meant socialist or, right, or leftist intellectual. It just was almost one and the same. Certainly from people on the right, it's a huge reason why they hated Jews. It's why huge reason why Hitler hated Jews, you know. The Jewish Bolshevik, the Jewish Marxist, it was basically one and the same. And I still get attacked sometimes as a cultural Marxist. It's just a code word for Jew, you know. Yeah. And even Milton Friedman had a lecture that was turned into an essay, and one part of it, it's subtitled The Anti-Capitalist Mentality of Jews. And he gets into why are Jews so anti-capitalist, and he thinks they just misunderstand history. And, you know, it's not so much the case now, but I think people understood then in the 70s when they were reading Holocaust denial stuff and Reason, they understood that we're actually attacking, you know, an anti-capitalist ethnic group, I guess we're called Jews, religion, ethnic group, whatever. But,
That makes total sense. And you still, and I think it's actually, as you say, I mean, just those same tropes around the Jewish intellectuals have just been, that is where this ridiculous idea that America is run by an elite of, as you say, of, you know, of academics and pundits. It's just the same stereotypes just deployed, you know, beyond beyond Jewish intellectuals. So the piece is in Pando Daily. Everybody needs to read this. It really is astonishing. On Reason editor defends its racist history. Here's a copy of its Holocaust denial special issue. But as you've been hearing with Mark, it's also just the bigger context as to why this isn't a historical oddity. This is still playing out every day in our politics, and that's why, unfortunately, you do have to see Nick Gillespie's leather jacket on TV. I wonder where he got those things or how many he has. He must have like a revolving, like, you know, one of those spinning hangers. He just grabs a different leather jacket. It's so ridiculous.
I wonder if he just takes photos of himself in the like mirror as well. Hey!
Hey!
Hey, free market. Hey!
So it's like, he's like a, I don't even know, I was going to say like he's like a not cool person's version of what a cool person would be, but I would say a not cool person in 1980s version of what a cool person would be. It's very problematic. But hey, Mark Ames, I really appreciate your time as always. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
It was great talking to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks, fascinating stuff. That's amazing. I'm so sick. I think I said it. That sounds like a late show type of comment. That's just like, yeah, fascinating stuff there, Mark Ames. Holocaust denialism. And so Mark, you used to live in Russia. Maybe that's what I should do one day, is I should just do half interview as Michael Brooks, half interview as Jay Leno, and see how the guest handles that. That could be funny. Just like, so Mark, I want to get
that's
to the
Matt and Mike version of like the deuce.
The deuce. Oh, my Lord. So let's take a switch because I need to I need to put some water in my face, to be honest. So
Dinesh D'Souza, folks, is
sorry,
having
funny.
A temper tantrum because his movie isn't doing too well. And why isn't it doing too well? Well, he's blaming Google.
Of course.
Dave Weigel over at Slate points out that Dinesh D'Souza's America is trudging towards a decent performance. It's not a blockbuster, Dave Weigel points out, but decent. Last weekend, it started to be removed from theaters, showing that, you know, the viewers who are the tickets are starting to drop off. So theaters are starting to pull it back and make room for more popular movies that are coming out. All movie theaters do this to all movies. It's not a conspiracy against poor Dinesh D'Souza. Its box office gross fell 30% from the previous weekend. And Dave Weigel again points out that's comparable to a fall-off for 22 Jump Street. So it happens.
It happens.
At this rate, the movie will be lucky to gross half as much as D'Souza's surprise 2012 hit, 2016 Obama's America. my advice to Dinesh D'Souza right off the bat is maybe try to think of a more creative name for your next movie, because you're using America a lot.
Right.
I mean, starting to overuse it. So anyway, what's going on is that lawyers representing Dinesh D'Souza's film, America, sent a letter to Google. They demanded that the search engine correct problems, they said, that were hurting the ability of the consumers to figure out where the movie was playing. The letter was claiming that Google confused America with, like I just said, without even realizing. I didn't even realize I was going to... They're confusing America with 2016, Obama's America. So this is Dinesh D'Souza's first movie that's been out of theaters for 2 years now. So Google's confusing 2016 Obama's America with the America movie. So they're not giving the new one, America. You know, when you type in a movie, like say you're going to go see Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Marvel movie coming out this weekend. And you go to Google and you type in Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And up top, Google will give you right away, before any links to any other sites, put in your zip code, we'll give you the show times and locations this movie's playing. Done. That's easy. But Google's algorithm is confusing Dinesh D'Souza's two movies. Not that big of a deal, no conspiracy behind it. But the lawyers for Dinesh D'Souza are demanding that Google disclose whether human ever was the source of the alleged mistakes, and they want to know what measures will be taken to fix the problem. This is really something. And Dinesh D'Souza's right-wing fans, the right-wing conservatives, the blogosphere, social media, they're eating this up. Right-wingers are accusing the search company of engaging in a plot of misinformation. Said one fan of the movie, "This mix-up is likely being coordinated by those in the film industry who hope the film fails at the box office."
Right.
They're also complaining that when you just type in America, for some reason, Dinesh D'Souza's movie, America, isn't the first search result. That must be a conspiracy. There's no way, you know, maybe when people type in America, Google's algorithm decides people are most likely searching for the United States of America or North America or South America or even people whose name is America. People who are probably more well-known than the America movie that Dinesh D'Souza just made. But no, there's a conspiracy. I wonder what we can do, Michael, for when our stuff doesn't show up the very first at Google. Can we get away with saying it's a conspiracy? I want to show up number one in Google for the term... politics. I want to show up first in the term for the term handsome, actually.
Indeed.
I want the world to know that I am the premier source online for sexy.
Well,
but
I got you beat, buddy. But you could be number two in the results.
Oh, well, I think we're going to have to fight with Google over who their true conspiracy is against. Is it Michael Brooks or Matt Binder? But
The true conspiracy is always against Dinesh
D'Souza. Now, let me
just
quickly, before I get to this next more absurd part of this story, search works this way. Google looks at your website through automated spiders and crawling. They basically find words in your articles or whatever, and they see if you're an authority on different terms. You know, if you're a website on, here you go, I'll throw this out there for you guys, on veganism. Then Google will realize that you deserve to be placed somewhere, maybe not page one because you're a new site or other sites are better at covering veganism than you are, but you will show up somewhere, anywhere from page one to a bazillion, however many websites on veganism there are out there, and they'll put you in there. However, if other authority sites, like if you've got links from the New York Times, New Yorker, websites that Google already knows are the premier sources for news information on a variety of topics, and you get constantly linked to these links back from these websites, you will rise up in the search rankings. And maybe if your website becomes the authority on veganism, your website will be on page one, perhaps even the second, third, or maybe even first link that shows up when people Google the term veganism. However, as we all know, our congresspeople are the true geniuses of the internet. They are the true search engine optimization masters. They are the SEO professionals. And one United States congressman, Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, is demanding to know why the giant internet company Google is not accurately putting Dinesh D'Souza's movie in the search engine results, aka up top number one on the first page, and he thinks there's a conspiracy going on and it should be investigated. Really, Rohrabacher told The Hollywood Reporter that he's so disturbed by Google's behavior that he intends on discussing it during the House Republican Conference, which is the party caucus for the Republicans in the House of Representatives. This doesn't deserve to be ignored, he said. We need to verify the statistics in some way, and I will be suggesting the appropriate committee or subcommittee have some kind of hearing on this. We know there were significant incidences that would suggest there were intent behind Google's non-performance. He's claiming Google purposely is out to get Dinesh D'Souza and make sure his movie America fails. I spoke to several people, he continued, and some said they had problems with the search. Some said, there we go again. And he just says it again. And some said they didn't. If there was an intent to confuse the public about this movie because of its ideological content, then we're going to find out about it. This charge has captured the attention of those of us who see that Google has acted arrogantly in a number of areas. Are you kidding me? And he has more. I'm not threatening to shut them down.
Phew.
But shining a spotlight on a corporation that is acting in an abusive way can have a great impact as legislation or regulation can. If Google isn't informing the public about movies they disagree with, then that needs to be exposed. Wow, strong words coming from a climate-denying Republican.
Exactly.
Yet we should really, the federal government really should investigate whether a private company is being biased against a movie distributed by a private company. Unbelievable. They really, and you know, and by the way, because Google doesn't feel like bothering with this conspiracy theory bullshit, because that's what it is. If you type in America in Google right now, not only does that usual, if you type in movie at the end of it and the usual Showtime results show up, America, the website for the movie, is actually the number one link now for the term America. Because Google just doesn't want to deal with this conspiracy theory bullshit. So now they're just saying, screw it. This movie is more important than people searching up information about the United States of America, North America, South America, etc.
It's ridiculous.
Well, right-wingers know how to roll when it comes to disinformation and conspiracy and making people believe it.
Let's. Do you want to go into the better half now?
Let's go into the better half. Yeah.
Okay, we'll go into the better half. We're going to switch up, and then Matt will do his stories. What do you got, Matt?
Oh boy, do I got some great stuff for all of you. We will be talking about what happened with the BuzzFeed plagiarist. Satanists would like to take advantage of the Hobby Lobby ruling. The latest on what's going on with Russia, Ukraine, and Dinesh D'Souza's got a problem with Google, and he's got some serious backing to find out what's going on.
Just what's going on. Also, as I say, I got this incredible clip from a hearing with a couple of Indian-American government officials with a Tea Party congressman, and maybe you guess where this is going, but whether you are or not, it's hilarious. And it's been confirmed that Hamas was not behind the abduction or murder of those Israeli teenagers. So we're going to touch on that. And also might get to this thing about China using trolls on Twitter to go after Dalai Lama. That's kind of an interesting story and all part of this kind of modern information warfare that we're dealing with. So, folks, become a member today. I cannot tell you all the ways of becoming a member right now because I feel like I'm about to pass out as I'm
sitting. You can support the show by becoming a member at majority.fm and clicking the link at the very top that says become a member. You can do so through PayPal. It's $10 a month, less than a cheap cup of coffee a day. That's less than a cheap cup of coffee a day. Whew. If PayPal isn't your jam, then you can email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And we will shoot you over the snail mail address where you can send a check. And that's a way you can become a member if you don't like PayPal. Other ways to support this show is buying all of your junk through our Amazon link at majorityreportkickback.com. You will see no difference at the Amazon website. The only difference is the exact amount you would pay Amazon if you just went to Amazon.com. There is no difference, I mean. They have to give us a little bit of their money. So that's the difference between the two of them. So you'll help us out. And you can also get some great fair trade coffee and chocolates at justcoffee.coop. And you can get 10% off by using the coupon code MAJORITY. How else can you support this show? You can subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us at YouTube, youtube.com/SamCedar. Subscribing on iTunes and YouTube are free, so I don't see why not. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/majorityreport. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/majorityfm. You can download our free app, majorityapp.com. Got an iPhone device, an iOS device, I mean, that covers iPhone, iPad, etc. Or do you have an Android device, whether it's a tablet, a phone, or whatever? The app works on them. Download it. Get shows, free shows. Get our YouTube feed really easily. Super easy way to listen to the live show. Super easy way to IM into the show. Super easy way to call into our phone systems when we are live. I don't know why you wouldn't have this
app. Speaking of which, you can call us 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 if you want to join the show. The IMs are open. We'll be back in the fun half.